Well, Jackie Road is just a place where we can have some fun. Well, I'm having fun at Jackie Road, doing cool interviews and writing songs.
Hey guys, it's Jack Post and you're listening to the Jackie Road Studios podcast. Episode 11 this week with special guest comedian Nikki Glaser. And because Nikki's such a high-profile guest, the biggest guest we've had in Jackie Road Studios, we may be attracting new listeners. So if it is your first time here, welcome to Jackie Road Studios. It's a podcast where I sit down with a guest and after the interview, I use something from the chat to inspire a brand new song that I write and record, and you'll hear at the end of the episode. So after the chat with Nikki today, there is a brand new song that I've only just finished. I feel like I say this every week, but I honestly mean it this time. I think this is the best of the songs that I've done so far. I feel like they've been getting better and better every week. And I want to thank people who have contributed to the songs and are helping out. I feel like we're building a little community here. Another big thanks to all the backing vocalists who worked on last week's song with me called My New Voice. That's streaming everywhere now. And this will bring us to song number 6. So we're halfway through the album. I want to get to 12 songs by the end of the first series of Jackie Road Studios. And then I've got a full album to put out. And I want to thank you guys for helping me make that possible. But let's get into today's guest, Nikki Glaser. I mean, Nikki's been on like Joe Rogan's podcast, Mark Maron's podcast. She's been on the biggest podcasts in the world. So it's crazy that she's sitting down in Jackie Road Studios this week. If you haven't seen her comedy before, her comedy special, Bangin', is streaming on Netflix now. She is a regular on Conan and Jimmy Kimmel. Just last week, she guest hosted Jimmy Kimmel while Jimmy was off. She's been on, just type Nikki into YouTube and see the great stuff that she does on like panel shows. She's always a great guest and on podcasts, and she's into roasts. She was on the roast of Bruce Willis and Rob Lowe, and more recently, the Alec Baldwin one. And Nikki is just, honestly, she's one of the funniest comedians I've ever seen live. And I've been lucky enough to see her a bunch of times. We actually know Nikki, my wife and I, and the Hamish and Andy team as well, because in 2011, when Hamish and Andy took their show to New York to make their very first gap year, we had a producer on the show called Chris Convey. Chris was dating Nikki at the time. He was also the producer of her show on MTV in 2011. And even though they're not together now, they're still good friends. And so we still see Chris a lot. We still see Nikki a lot. Chris, to give context to him, for really, really hardcore fans of the Hamish and Andy show, you might know him. Andy traveled to the US once to surprise Chris. He dressed as a waiter and took Chris's order at a restaurant. And then you see Chris get surprised as he realizes it's Andy. That's Chris Convey. And then he surprised Andy a bunch of times, and probably Hamish, and back the other way. He surprised Bianca and I at our wedding. He flew in the morning of our wedding, put a GoPro on his head, and after the ceremony, surprised us at the reception. So we're still good friends with Chris, and through that, we're still good friends with Nikki as well. And I'm so happy that she sat down with me on Jackie Road this week. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, then what I'm about to tell you will shock you. Nikki's song that she's chosen as an intro song, I ask every guest to bring in a song to introduce themselves, is a Taylor Swift song. We've talked about it and joked about it on the show that anytime the guest brings in an intro song, if it's going to be Taylor Swift, then it's most likely going to get taken down off the internet for copyright infringement. I am going to persist here. I'm going to play a little bit of the... I'm going to just play the tiniest bit of August, the song that Nikki has chosen off Taylor Swift's new album, Folklore, which... if Taylor Swift's lawyers are trolling through this to find copyrighted material, me and my wife, big fans of the new Folklore album by Taylor Swift. I'm going to play just a little bit of August here to introduce Nikki. This whole episode is up on YouTube as well. You can see the full interview if you type in Jack Post or Jackie Road Studios into YouTube. You can see the whole video there. I will not put 1 second of Taylor Swift in the YouTube video, lest it be taken down straight away. And then I'll try and do a video for every guest episode going forward. Nikki Glaser joins me in Jackie Road Studios. Here we go. A tiny little bit of August by Taylor Swift to kick us off. Nikki Glaser joins me in this episode of Jackie Road Studios. That is Taylor Swift, August. Nikki, how are you?
I'm so good, Jack. After that song, I mean, let me just be honest with you. I have listened to that. That song has not even been out for 1 week. Like, it was released less than a week ago. Oh, actually, today. Today marks the anniversary of when that song was released. Actually, not even midnight tonight. So not even a week. And I've listened to that song, I swear to you, probably around, if I was guessing, 213 times. If I really was trying to make a real estimate and not exaggerate at all, 213 times. 214 now.
Bianca and I put it on a Saturday night, that first weekend that it came out. It's like, new Taylor Swift, like to get us up, get us bouncing for the weekend. It's kind of a somber album.
Yeah. Did you end up in a closet just clutching yourself, crying, rocking back and forth? I mean, it's so somber. It makes me, I don't really know that it's good for me, to be honest with you. I've been talking about it so much on my podcast and like just with anyone who will listen. I truly walked past three teenagers the other day when I was on my run and I had given up and I was walking and there were three 15-year-old girls and it was like 2 days after it had been released. And I just knew they were like in it and they knew it and they were talking about it. And I was so jealous that they had some, I almost stopped them and was like, can I just walk a couple blocks with you so we can discuss the trilogy that's going on between Betty, James, and August. So but I don't think it's good for me because someone's just sent me this morning an article about how if you're someone prone to depression, you like depressing music, it's not a good thing. Like it will actually make you more depressed. Whereas sometimes people that are just normal, when they get sad and they listen to a sad song, it helps them feel the sadness and like work through it.
Right.
But with depressed people, it tells you you're right and that your outlook is you're right on point. Things are not looking good. They never will be good. And it like re-solidifies that in your mind. So I think it came out when I was kind of on a downward slope into like feeling a little sad. And now I'm like, oh, I'm going to be there for a couple weeks with this album. But it feels so good.
So what music do they suggest instead?
I think they like, don't let go. You got the brilliant in you. I don't know. That song always gets me going. That's the one I should, because they literally are like, listen to anything upbeat. Like they actually suggested One Direction's that's what makes you beautiful. Oh, like just having a bunch of teenage boys tell you you're beautiful without makeup is supposed to keep the, you know, dark thoughts at bay.
So I saw on your Instagram stories, you were making like a World Cup FIFA knockout system of the Taylor Swift songs on this newest album, going head to head to choose the best song.
I did this at the beginning of the quarantine with just her greatest hits. I'm such a Taylor Swift fan that a lot of fans online were filling out these brackets of her songs to like crown a winner. And I just have really already been such a fan of hers and for so long. So I was already into making brackets and figuring out what my favorite song is. I'm just really love being a teenager again with like living this teenage experience that I kind of missed out on with the pop stars that were given to me as a teenager, like Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera and Mandy Moore just didn't fill me with as much as like the understanding that Taylor Swift has of my life and how she writes it. I just feel so seen and understood by an artist. So I've become like obsessed in a teenage girl like way. And so, yes, I made a bracket to figure out my favorite song on Folklore and it's August, hands down.
And so what is your relationship now with Taylor Swift? So for people who don't know, explain why you popped up in her documentary.
That to me is not how I would define my relationship with her, I hope, but it is a part of my story and my journey with Taylor Swift is that I've been a fan since 2013 was when I first really fell in love with her music and her.
What album would that have been?
It was Red. And we listened to it. I was on my first photo shoot. I had a show on MTV. It was my first like TV gig, first TV show ever. And I was just at this photo shoot, and photo shoots are so painful. It's one of the worst things about being in this business is having to like get new photos of yourself because you age out of the old ones. And like having to have someone take pictures of you and trying to be a model and like look as good as possible. It's been some of the worst experiences of my life in the business is dealing with photographers that usually work on like modeling, like shoots with models, and then they have to deal with you and they're just frustrated. And I feel like, oh my gosh, I'm not in control. I can't be funny in these photos. Like the thing that I'm good at being and personable, yeah. I just can't convey through a lens, like smizing at a guy with a camera. And these guys always say the most, like, I remember one time when I was just feeling so frustrated. I couldn't make a new face. I don't have any new faces to make. I've exhausted all the faces. And because the fun faces I know how to make are funny equals like kind of surprising looking equals not attractive.
Yeah. And do you feel like photographers who work with comedians or like even same things happens with radio hosts, they just want you to do a whole lot of different goofy faces, like essentially be a clown, like now do one with your hands in your ears and now do one with a stroppy face and now do one like you're yes. really mad.
Yes. But I have found that I would be more comfortable doing those, but I found that I challenge myself to like be a model or something because like when I really get dressed up and like have full hair and makeup, like I can look pretty decent for
you look great.
Like,
I can look pretty hot.
Yeah. Like I just don't recognize myself. So then you convince yourself you're like a model because you're having these people who dress models dress you. You're yeah. having these people who shoot models shoot you. And so you try to be that, and I am just not a model. So one time this guy was so frustrated with me because I really had exhausted every look. And I remember he just kind of like was just getting, I could just sense his energy being like ticked off at me and like just annoyed that I can't give him what he wanted. And he just to cut the tension, I go, I'm sorry, I'm not a model. And just like really like embarrassingly, yeah. like just like not like, sorry, I'm not a model, but like, I'm sorry, I'm not a model, dude. Like this sucks. And he goes, it's okay. he really thought I was just sincerely apologizing. Yeah. And that's how I felt. Like that's how I feel about so many things. It's just like, I am sorry I'm not a model. I really, things would be much easier, I feel, if I were. And so those situations, so that photo shoot, the first one I ever did, which is my first foray into that uncomfortability that would follow me throughout my career, was listening to Taylor Swift's Red and just feeling so connected with it. And then it just spiraled from there. Every album, she's kind of like, she has a song for every mood of mine and for every relationship and every circumstance that I could be in. There is a song that I can like feel those feelings about that moment by listening to her songs. And it's, it really is kind of disturbing how obsessed I am with Taylor Swift as a 36-year-old woman. It's not okay, and I'm not saying it is okay, but it feels so good.
And in the documentary, it's your part in it is like a clip.
Yeah, I'm sorry,
from a
I didn't even
show.
Get to that.
No, that's all right. But what is your?
So I've been mouthing off about Taylor Swift for years. I have a lot of opinions about her, and there was a phase that I was promoting. I was promoting some. I was doing an ad for gum, Orbitz gum. And they had me like going around promoting the ad that I had made. So I did some show with some guy on a couch that is on YouTube on his yeah. channel and part of the press day. And he asked me about Taylor Swift. And I was like, she's too skinny and she has model friends. Again, back to the model thing. And yeah. I was just like jealous at that moment because I think I realized I couldn't be friends with Taylor Swift with the kind of people she was collecting. Like she would not let me in because obviously I'm sorry, I'm not a model, Taylor. And she go, it's okay.
It's okay. And so you can join somewhere in the back of the entourage.
Yes. Go back next to Lena Dunham. You guys can hang out back there. Keep her company. So I just felt left out and angry about it. So I said something stupid like that. And I was probably just jealous that she was like thinner than me, whatever it was. But what I said was not funny or like cool. And I just felt, and then, so anyway, and I never in a million years would think Taylor Swift would see that. I wouldn't yeah. ever, I love Taylor Swift. I wouldn't talk that way. It was like talking about a best friend behind her back, you know,
yeah.
which you do when you love someone, you tend to like vent. And I just, if I ever thought she would have heard that, I would never said it. And then she did, because the director of her documentary definitely went and tried to find the meanest thing said about Taylor Swift by, you know, maybe recognizable people, but probably just like any kind of talking head. And she found that.
Well, it was a part of the documentary that was like, this is all the stuff that she has to deal with on a daily basis.
Know.
So you actually became part of like... her enemies.
The enemy reel. Yeah, I was a part of the reel of like bad guys in this woman's life. And it was really to set up, this is why Taylor Swift disappeared for a year, was because people like this woman going off about her where you have no business. And it was just the most ironic thing that could ever happen to me. Alanis Morissette, if you need a new lyric that you want to pop in to your song, it's like being framed as an enemy of the person who you love more than anything in this whole world, and who you would never, like, it was so bad. But I didn't know if I was going to be in the documentary, but I thought I might be because I watched the trailer to it. A week before the documentary came out, there was a trailer that came out, and I watched that thing as soon as it came out because I love her so much and I'm on like the forefront of all Taylor Swift news. And I watched the trailer and there I heard my voice. You didn't see my face, you just heard my voice.
Oh,
and
no.
All it said was, she's too skinny. And I think it was just that line, not the model friends line, but I heard it and I dropped my phone. And yes, I only dropped my phone like 6 inches because I was looking at it in bed. But still, I did have a moment of like gasping. Like I just heard myself. Can you imagine like pulling up something where you're like, I'm a fan of this person, and it's like the biggest news is they're dropping this trailer, and then you hear your own voice being an asshole to that person?
So is there any rules like, are you allowed to, the week before when you hear the trailer, are there any rules like, hey, I don't approve my voice being in this. I don't want the clip being played. Or is that stuff just not even worth trying?
You know, great question. Because first of all, Jack, I don't think I would have even tried to get it taken out because that would have affected Taylor Swift in a negative way. And they'd have to, it would be
and
like,
you've already done enough damage.
I don't want to bother her with a slew of emails. I didn't want to make it me against her. Like, you know what? If I'm in this thing, I just have to deal with it. What I did do, I sent it to all my friends and they're like, Nikki, that's not your voice. You're being paranoid. And I'm like, okay, maybe I am, but I know for a fact that's my voice. And they're like, but you would never say anything bad about her ever. And I was like, I know me. I talk about you behind your back. Like, you think I'm not loyal? No, but I was just like, I know that I said something stupid about her weight at one point. Of course I did. Everyone felt like they could comment on it. And I was, you know, just so... I knew it was myself. I wrote to my agents, I wrote to my lawyers, and I wrote to my publicist, which I had all those things at the time because I was really killing it before this whole thing. And I wrote an email being like, listen, I'm in the trailer. It's my voice. Can we just find out? Can I just prepare for
what it is
to come? Like how much I am in the documentary. And everyone was like, Nikki, it is your voice, but like, they're probably not going to show you. It's not going to be a big deal. My lawyer did write back, Nikki, no matter what happens, I still love you. Like on the side. Like
that makes it sound like this could be the end.
Yeah, because they know the machine that Taylor Swift is. And like, you don't want to be on the other side of, you don't want to unleash the wrath of her fans first and foremost. But like also this could be bad.
Yeah. Well, there's a running joke on this podcast even that if someone ever chose a Taylor Swift song for the intro song, that she's... vicious for taking stuff down off the internet that has her music in it. So for all we know, I mean, this interview may never get played for more than a day before the lawyers.
Oh man! Okay. Well, we can pick another just to like mitigate against that. Let's just say that like the intro would have been August, but it was
a song from an unpopular band.
Yeah, what was the song they're supposed to listen to? Instead, it was One Direction's "That's What Makes You Beautiful," which also will probably get you pulled down. I mean, these are two.
Yeah, you just went from one of the biggest artists to the second biggest artist in the world.
I don't know what I was thinking.
So what's your relationship with her now? Have you met her since then?
Not since, but she did. I wrote an apology on my Instagram because the video did come out and it was like, I just got ahead of it. No one really even noticed me in it. And everyone was like, you're bringing attention to this when no one would have noticed. And maybe that's the truth. But I just wanted to reach out to her and let her know I was sorry because it really did feel like she was like my friend that I got caught talking shit about. And I knew she saw it because she saw her own documentary.
Of course.
So I wrote an apology and she just wrote a comment back being like, thank you so much. And like, it was so nice. And it was like, you could, when you read it, you could like hear her voice in it. And it was just like, oh my God, if now I have a little bit of like traction with her. Like I have a jumping off point for like our next interaction, but I'm just like, she can come to me. I am not going to pursue her, but she is well aware that I would be friends with her and I'm here for whenever she needs me.
And when you watch documentaries like that, I actually loved that documentary.
So good.
Another one I watched recently was the Michael Jordan one and the Bulls. When you watch somebody who's like...
I am so obsessed with The Last Dance.
Yeah. When you watch something like that with people working so hard in their lives, do you try to like... overlay your own life over the top of that and go like, am I working as hard as these people, as Taylor Swift, as Michael Jordan?
Yeah, I do. And you always will come up short. I mean, especially, but Taylor Swift is Jordan-esque. Like, yeah,
definitely.
I learned so, you know what I didn't, I try not to compare myself because I've let that go. I cannot, if I compare myself to Taylor Swift, it's just, she's younger and she's achieve more than I have at my age, which is always how I kind of like keep the barometer is like, okay, I've let that go. She's like,
yep.
There's no way I'm ever going to be that successful and that good at what I do. I truly believe that. And Jordan, I feel the same way. So I've let that go, but I do really relate to like the work ethic because I think that's what set them up. That's what sets them apart from other artists. Like when you really boil it down,
yeah,
you can be naturally talented and that is always going to be a huge boon to you when you're building a career in this business, but it's really about who works hardest. You can outwork talent, natural talent. You will blow past someone who was just born talented and didn't work hard if you work hard and you're not that talented.
Yeah, that you never see the Netflix documentary about the super successful person who's like, yeah, I didn't really try. Another day off for me.
Yeah,
here.
Yes. You really, there's no one that's just, yeah. And that's what I loved about The Last Dance. Cause you look at someone like Rodman, right? Who would like party hard and you're like, wow, he didn't have the same work ethic that Michael Jordan did, but he did in his own way. I mean, all of those guys were extremely hardworking and I just found it so fascinating. And Jordan, the documentary really shook me because I went into that watching it not as like a basketball fan and knowing about Michael Jordan enough and being interested in his character and how he holds on to like resentments for a really long time. And, but I had no idea that he would just make up like things to get mad about people about. So it would push him to just show people.
It's a super interesting way to motivate yourself, isn't it? But he obviously needed that to, like, he would essentially pinpoint people from other games that he's had against them and players who, you know, gave him one word exchange as they walk into the bench, and next time he played them he would destroy because he used that as fuel.
And a lot of times the guys didn't even say the thing that he imagined. He would make it up in his head. It was just wild that he would do that for himself, but it just made me look at like different forms of motive. Like that was just I had never thought of that approach, but I guess I have used that in some ways in my life of being, just being competitive in this business has definitely driven me. It's like when COVID hit and every stand-up comedian had to stop doing stand-up, guess what? I didn't care that I wasn't doing stand-up. So it kind of told me that what was motivating me to do stand-up was just trying to keep up with everyone and be
right,
as opposed to just a love of the game. Now that I've kind of gotten out of it and could maybe approach it from a different way, I can find the love for the game again. But for so long, it was just about, I gotta work hard.
You can't stop.
And working hard is like, I mean, even Michael Jordan's like relaxing now. Like you can't do it forever. I'm 36. I've been working really hard for a really long time. And it's kind of nice to take a break, I got to admit.
How do you find stand-up versus the TV stuff?
Well, stand-up is like TV you can just jump in and out of. Like I guest hosted Jimmy Kimmel Live last
week. It's fantastic.
And thank you. And it was like, you know, this one special event that you prepare super hard for, and I did it and I landed it and I felt accomplished and I was is good and then you're done. But stand up, to be good at a live performance of stand up comedy, I have to do it like every night. I have to really lead up to like taping a special. So the idea that I'm going to get out of this COVID thing and be able to tape a special anytime soon again is just It's kind of off limits. The world will have to open up in a way that I can do stand up all the time to do it again. So I'm kind of having to let stand up go for a bit because of the fact that we can't be indoors with people right now performing. It's kind of a shame, but it's doing stand up every night. It's a young person's game, and it's like was really fun to do, and I'll probably do it again when I don't when I'm running from like a personal life, but. I'm kind of ready to like maybe have a personal life and have a home and not be constantly fleeing and traveling every weekend and out every single night. And so I don't know. It's a totally different approach though. TV is just these like little hits here and there of like, oh, I did it. And stand-up's more of a like just constant process.
Yeah. With the Jimmy Kimmel thing, I love the monologue, but the weird thing about it at the moment is because you got no studio audience, you're delivering it to silence. Is that hard?
Yeah. It was so weird because Jack leading up to that, it's just in a house. There's four like people in the house with you. Yeah. When this used to be a gigantic production with a huge studio audience. There's four producers, and then like you're outside by a pool at a cabana for your green room because it's like shooting in this house in the Hollywood Hills, this like empty house. So it was so weird because I watched a lot of the other guest hosts leading up to it in preparation for it to see like. What is this? And everyone, no matter how funny their monologue was, it was awkward.
It's awkward,
isn't
it?
It's so awkward. It is not comfortable to watch. I don't like it. And so I approached it like, how do I make people at home not feel awkward for me and that I don't care that there's no one here? So I tried to just get to a place where I truly didn't need laughter or care that no one was laughing. And I felt like I got there.
Yeah, I think people can see it on YouTube if you type in Nikki Glaser, Jimmy Kimmel. But I think you did well with like playing the clips and stuff. The problem is, and I've watched some of the other guest hosts do the monologues as well to no audience, is it's a much more, you watch it much more like intellectually rather than laughing. You're like, yes, that is funny. Ha ha, mm-hmm, that is a funny joke.
Yes. You don't realize how much you rely on other people laughing to get you to laugh. And I canned laughter in sitcoms is like so essential. And I don't know why we can't use it on late night. I was like, I offered to like write in at the very beginning of the monologue. I wanted to be like, hey, this is awkward and sucks. So let's choose some canned laughter. And I was going to like do this.
That's a great idea.
I was going to do a bit where I was like, oh, I recorded the last performance I did. And so let's just use the laughter from that. And then like I get laughs. And then at the end, some guy's like, take off your top. And I'm like, I'm wearing a one piece. It would be like very confusing to take off, sir. And then I'd start talking to this like disembodied voice, but I only had like 3 minutes. So I had to cut a whole chunk, but I wanted some kind of reaction. I'm like, can we even just let the cameraman chuckle? Like
that's
anything.
What I was going to say. Like the people in a room, even the background laughter would have added
four
something.
People.
Yeah.
Something. And they laugh during rehearsal though. That's the awkward part is that you have to rehearse in front of these people. So for them to laugh during it would be so insincere because it's just like, so that's awkward, but I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but I feel like if I was given like, I feel like there are some shows that are watchable in this time, but a lot of them are just deeply uncomfortable to watch.
And then you know if Jimmy, I mean, I assume he's just on holiday and that's why he's taking a break. Does he watch the shows?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely does. He is oversees his show. Like, he's all over that show and, like, very proud of it and like, chose people to guest host. So I know he was watching, and I'm friends with his wife, and she was DMing me that they had seen it and good job, and it was really sweet. But, yeah, I was definitely thinking about him, like, watching. I think he probably watched it as I taped. There was, like, a live feed, like, that was my parents watched as I taped because they were remote from my house and they had a setup. So a lot of people were watching that I didn't realize. It was a weird, weird day. And now it's even weirder because I hosted a late night talk show a week ago. And now I'm like in my parents' house in St. Louis where I like live kind of permanently now in my childhood bedroom. It's just like, It's too weird.
But that's just because of quarantine, is it, that you keep finding yourself back in St. Louis, or you actually feel like that's going to be home again someday?
Well, I'm looking at apartments now to like actually settle down here, right? Because I have no reason to really be in New York or LA. I fly there when I need to do TV, but there's really no TV work to be had. And in New York, I have the clubs. I was there so I could do stand-up comedy every night and have, you know, there's just so many clubs to perform at, but now you can't do that. So I just don't see any point in going back yet. When they open up, I'm going to be really mad that I just got a year lease here. But but I don't see that happening anytime soon. We're kind of flubbing this whole thing.
I want to come back to the St. Louis, but just one more question about TV.
Yeah.
You do the roasts. I think you've done Bruce Willis and Rob Lowe.
Yes.
But the problem I would have with that is like, it's great fun. Everybody's making fun of each other. And the idea is to be as mean as possible as you can. And in the moment, I bet it's all fun. After, in the green room, I bet everyone's laughing and having fun. But does there get a moment as you're going to sleep that night that you think about everything that everybody said and you're like, I don't feel good about myself?
Yeah, Jack, there is a huge hangover that I did not even foresee. I remember the first roast I did, someone on the red carpet, there was like, you know, we were doing a red carpet thing right before we go live. And one of the reporters was like, so how do you feel about being completely torn to shreds tonight? And I was like, oh, wait, I did not brace. I have not given a single thought to a joke that would be said about me because I've been working so hard on jokes about other people. Yeah. I had not even considered it. And maybe that was out of preservation because
I've been working so hard on being mean to other people that I forgot that people are going to be mean to me.
Yes. And then I sit there and they like, you know, they say I look like Owen Wilson and Larry Bird and that I look like a model from behind, but then you turn around and she looks like a comedian. And it's just like, it's all these things that you fear about yourself are said. And the thing that hurts the most is when people laugh super hard because the joke won't land if it doesn't have truth to it. But when someone's like, when you're like, okay, that is really mean that you just like the way you guys just reacted, that was meaner than the joke. Like those were moments. And honestly, I was like, I was shook after the last one I did with, it was the Alec Baldwin one.
Yeah.
And Blake Griffin, who is a basketball player, he like was dated, like dates supermodels. And he's just like a really hot guy. And I just pretty much like used my entire chunk of my set about him just to tell him how hot he was and like hit on him. Cause I just thought that would be a funny, very sincere angle to just, so all of my insults were really about how hot he was. But it was funny. And then he gets up there and like, just says the meanest stuff about me, says that like, he's the one that says I look like Larry Bird. And then he says she couldn't, except that he couldn't pass for 33. Like, I guess Larry Bird's number was 33. So he said, I couldn't, I wouldn't never pass for 33. And I was like, I mean, it was like devastating. It was so mean. And I had to just sit there and like laugh. But when he sat back down, because we had like a slight flirtation before that, like our arms touched and it was like a thrilling feeling. And you know, when you touch arms and you leave it and you just are like, oh, that person's not moving and I'm not moving either. We're our arms are flush. Yeah.
Interesting strategy though on TV.
Oh, I don't mind. I would love for someone to see me do that and be like, look at Glazer try, like, because we both were leaving it, but no one could have seen it.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing he didn't even feel it. I bet he has like some injury where his arm is like deadened. He like didn't know I was like stroking his arm.
But can you comfort yourself in the fact that, but surely Blake Griffin is not writing his jokes. There's somebody, a writer, putting his jokes together. So that's not really coming from him.
But he had to go, yeah, she does look like Larry Bird. Like, he had to, like, co-sign on it. And he also is really funny. So I do think he, like, did have some participation in his own material, but the thing was, I know the writing staff of that show and I, like, knew who wrote those jokes for him. And I was just like, because I heard someone was writing for him and that person I'd been on a roast with, it was Jimmy Carr. The comedian Jimmy Carr. I had done the roast with him the year before, and he can be so mean about my looks. Like, he's just someone he's one of the funniest comedians, but he's mean.
I mean, that's it. His whole thing is like being vicious to people. Hey,
Yes, so vicious. And I knew as soon as I heard some of the jokes, I was like, fucking Jimmy Carr. Like, that's who thinks I look like that, not Blake Griffin. But I swear to God, when he got done with the set, I was just like, ugh, I'm not into him anymore. Like, that was so mean. Because I was like, I can't believe he said those things about me. Like, my feelings truly got hurt. And I was in sort of a sad mood the rest of the night because I was like, I'm old and ugly. And like, my friends are like, you just killed. What are you sad about? And I was just like, Blake Griffin has just like said mean things and everyone's going to know that about me now. And it's going to haunt me. And it kind of does haunt me. Like, trolls will sometimes be like, Larry Bird. Like, it does follow you around.
So is there anything that the producers should do, or like any therapist on the show who does like an aftercare program for the, yes, for the people getting made fun of?
That would really be a good idea to have someone on.
Like a check-in, at least a day eight later.
Yeah, there's someone to talk to. I already have a therapist, so thank God. I definitely talked about some of that stuff. But it I'm not joking, you, Jack. Like, I think it was the first time I was like, oh, I have to go see someone about having like face stuff done. Like, I need lasers. Oh, no, I need to get injections. No. Like, that was the first time I was like, my face looks like I'm being compared to a man a lot. I need to like make my face look less mannish. And then
come out and say like, who's Larry Bird now?
Yeah. Yeah. And then they make fun of you for looking like, you know, a giant, like shiny cat or whatever you come out looking like when you get all the work done to fix the Larry Bird. So you can't really, it's either a cat or a bird. I don't know what I'm going to... I can't win. I'm not 22.
All right, let's go. Let's go back to St.
Sorry,
Louis.
Sorry, I'm not a model.
St. Louis, your hometown where you grew up. And the introduction to you, I'll give you a little bit of context of how I know you and your ex-boyfriend, Chris, who is from St. Louis as well. And most of my fans for this show come from the Hamish and Andy show, and super fans would know Chris on there because there's a couple of times that they've done things with Chris before. So there's a little bit of context for Chris.
Yes.
He's a radio host now in St. Louis.
He is.
Do you go on his show regularly?
Yeah, I go every week. I just actually did it this morning. I call in every Thursday morning and they introduce me as like with all my credits and then like, yeah, and the ex-girlfriend of our host, Chris Convey. And then, yeah, we do a couple segments together. It's so freaking weird and cool. And that this guy who I just met and ended up dating because he was a producer on my TV show is now like on one of the number one stations and on air. A guy that was behind the scenes is now on air and like killing it in my hometown where I am also living. Never thought I would again. And it's just, my life is like it's like an episode of Dawson's Creek. It just feels like I'm living a sitcom.
And would you say you have an unconventional relationship with your ex-boyfriend? Because, I mean, he still comes up in your stand-up all the time, or at least I like to believe any time you mention ex-boyfriend, I picture Chris.
Yeah, I mean, he is the only person that I would have called a boyfriend in the past, but there's guys I've dated since him that wouldn't, if I say boyfriend, I wouldn't say boyfriend for them. So it's pretty, it kind of sucks because it's safe to assume any time a boyfriend is mentioned, it's him.
Yep.
Because I have had so few in my life because it's just, I don't know what's wrong with me, but yeah, he was the one, and now we're just like friends, and it's truly unconventional. And we dated, I think we were together all in all like three and a half years, but we've broken up so much. And we, you know, up until like a year or so ago, we were still like, you know, dating, I guess. And now we're just friends, but it's totally unconventional. And
so is there a chance that it'll ever come back around? Like, is it still ebbing and flowing, coming into boyfriend, girlfriend territory?
It's tricky because we both are obviously still attracted to each other, which is always just feels really good. Sometimes my mom asks me why I hang out with him because she's like, isn't that painful? Like being around someone that you can't be with because the timing's not right. Or like, you know, cause I don't think he wants to be in a relationship right now. And I don't know really where I am. I'm like, I would be open to something, but like not if someone doesn't want to be into one. So I'm fine with whatever it is. But the truth of the matter is, it's just fun to be around someone that you have like sexual chemistry with and like flirtiness with. And even if you can't do anything, it's almost like more fun that you can't. Like, it's fun to like kind of dance around those things. And like, it makes us, it's like invigorating. Cause like once you're with someone a long time, that kind of like newness and like nervousness and like, could this be, will this be, kind of goes away. And I have that again with someone and who I'm already extremely comfortable with in that way. So it's actually pretty fun. We just watch Normal People and get kind of horny, and then we say goodnight.
How good is Normal People? Oh yeah. And that's the ultimate, like,
dude, we're watching
tension.
Normal People. Yeah. And it's about like the other night I go, do you realize we're watching our like a version of our story? And I don't even know how it ends yet, but I'm thinking not that great.
It's so good. Yeah, for people who haven't seen Normal People, it's essentially a couple, and it goes through many years of their life where they're together and then they pull apart, they have different partners, and they come back together again. The whole time you want them so badly to get together.
Yes, yes. And I think people are rooting for me and Chris in that way, but who knows what will happen. But I never thought I'd be in a position like this where like he's helping me look at apartments now. Like we just like, we talk pretty much every day, and we don't see each other that much because we're both living with our parents. But so I only get to, he comes over and watches Normal People when my parents go to their cabin, which is like 20 miles away. Like once every couple weeks we get to see each other. So it really feels like
that
high
is
school
very
again.
High school.
It's high school. It's so, if we were to ever, that's maybe why we aren't hooking up. There's nowhere to do it. You know, like we'd have to like go like to like a, you know, a makeout point, and those are all shut down because of COVID. No parks.
Last time I saw you do stand up as well in New York, Chris was still, because and everyone who's seen your stand up wouldn't be surprised to know you talk a lot about sex in your act.
I used to when I was having it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, even now that if you're not having it, there's still a lot of like, I'm not having sex material.
There is. I mean, not so much anymore, but like, yeah, that's all I talked about before because I like loved talking about it. But someone the other day was like, you're like a sex comic. And I'm like, oh my God, that's hilarious. I don't relate to any that person at all anymore. But yes, I talked a lot about sex and our sex life. And he was like, he was okay with it, which is like nearly impossible to find in a partner.
But for some time, he was not watching anything you did. So he wasn't aware. He knew he was being talked about, but he would never see it.
Yeah. I don't know if that was good or bad because it gave me license to maybe say more than he would have liked me to say. So there was no way to get a read for like what was okay and wasn't okay. But he generally always gave me the rule of like, if it's funny, you can say whatever you want. And I just thought that was like the most loving thing a guy could, to let me be creatively like completely free. As long as it's funny, I could say what I want. And I think that I would approach my next like relationship with a little bit less of like, I'd be a little bit more private. I would take a page out of Taylor Swift's book and like keep that kind of more private because, I was young and it was my first boyfriend and it was first time like having a boyfriend since doing stand-up comedy. And I was like excited to talk about every little detail.
Yeah. So do you think that if people came and saw you do stand-up now and you didn't do any sex material in there, they would have expected that, or like that's on brand for you? Or do you think it doesn't matter?
I don't think they'd notice because I don't know that, I hope that's not what people come to me for. Cause I've never, I do talk a lot about sex, and as I've always said, it's just because it's what I've been interested in. And as my interests change, I feel like I can still like whatever. As long as I'm excited about talking about it, I'm going to be able to be funny about it. And that for a while, I was just like so excited to talk about sex. I still am. Like I still talk about porn. I still am like, think it's very interesting to hear about people's, I'm doing solo projects right now when it comes to sex more than anything. So like, that's what my material would be about, is like making eye contact with my dog while I'm masturbating. Yeah. Like,
I guess that's what I meant by sex. It's like, it's still about that. Like watching porn and masturbating is still about sex.
Yeah. And you're right though. Even when I'm not doing that stuff, it's about like not doing it. But, I will say though that Chris Convey went and saw me do an hour of material like in June, and he was like, I can't believe that I would have my mom watch that hour of your material. Like that, you didn't talk, I didn't talk about sex at all, like at all. And it was because I was just like going through a time in my life where like nothing. I was just no libido. Like, I was kind of depressed. COVID had just hit. I'm living with my parents. And so just by virtue of not being interested in it and being excited about it, I didn't even mention it. So I think I can, I sometimes used to think that I was like just limited in that way. Like, maybe I'm not funny if I'm not allowed to be blue, but I trust now that I'll be able to be a comedian well into, you know, menopause.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I feel like we've talked for half an hour without mentioning sex and it's been very funny, but I feel like do you get the sense that people who interview you always want to ask about it? Because I mean, watching clips of you on YouTube and listening to other people's
podcasts. Yeah, that's what comes up first.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it makes people, they tend to want to ask about it. And that's where I did a podcast with recently, and the host said that my material sometimes made her feel sad because she was like, God, I don't like sex as much as Nikki Glaser likes sex. And I feel like I should. And I feel like embarrassed that I don't. And I should be this girl that talks openly about it. And I just am not that girl. And I was like, oh no, like I'm not that girl either. Like I truly, watching my special Bangin' on Netflix that came out less than a year ago, I don't even relate to that material at all. Like that was a moment in time for me. So I almost feel sad sometimes when that's like my brand, because I am definitely coming at it from the perspective now of like, okay, if I'm not into that stuff, like who am I? Am I like worthless? Am I like, should I feel shame about not being into it? And the truth is no, life is just, you can find other things to be into, like Taylor Swift's new album, Folklore. Yeah.
All right. Well, before I finish, can I ask you just one sex question then?
Yeah.
I guess it's more of a comment really, but I've heard you having sex.
Oh my God.
I
want my computer to crash right now so bad. Like, honestly, Jack, I can't take this question. I don't know if I can take this question. I'm going to do it because for the sake of doing things that make me extremely uncomfortable, and because it's like, I have to just put up with it. Okay. What do you want me to say to that? Because I could say a lot, or I could ask you to keep talking. Like, do you have, I don't even want to know what you heard. I'm really sorry. I want to issue an apology to you. I do not ever try to rub in anyone's face like, I'm having sex. I'm going to be so loud. Everyone in the house shall hear me. Like, I never. I think that person is so annoying and so and like, just like the worst person is someone who has loud sex so that their friends can hear it. I thought I was being quiet. I assure you, I had no idea when I'm loud. I have no concept of it because so many people have told me that they've heard me have sex and I would never want that to happen. It's the most humiliating thing I can even think about. And I'm really, really sorry.
No, I don't think it was over the top. It was actually the night before I proposed to Bianca.
Oh my God.
Was the night that, because she was flying into New York and I got there a night early to set up the surprise for the proposal. So I stayed at Chris's house and then you were coming into town the same day. So I guess you guys hadn't seen each other for a while. So it makes sense. But no, I would say it's not over the top. I just thought that it was a clickbaity type question to throw into the mix.
It's very clickbaity. And my reaction, wait till you see it. You can't see my face, but like,
I thought you left for a second.
I have never felt that way on a podcast. Honestly, the last time this kind of came up was like, was one time Chris's brothers were calling me like Wolfie one day. And they said that I was like howling. And I can't believe, like, his brothers hearing me have sex is like the most disgusting thing I could ever think of. And they said that I was howling like a wolf, which I would never even know that I make those noises. And then also, like, this has haunted me. I'm so glad I'm not having sex anymore, honestly. Like,
well, now, especially like staying at your parents' house, or if Chris is living with his parents, now it's just way too risky.
I know for a fact now that his parents have heard me have sex. Like, it is like, it's too sure. Like, not from like recently, but in the past. Like,
what about your parents?
My parents have said that they, on my show, Not Safe, that I like created with Chris Convy, we did a segment where I hooked my parents up to a lie detector test and I asked them questions, which I did not write. But one of the questions was, have you heard me had sex? And I had to ask my dad that and he had to say yes. And then the guy running the lie detector had to confirm it. And it was up until this moment, one of the most like heart like stopping moments of my career, like being on camera. Like I literally was almost like cut when you said that.
The show's over. Yeah, people should definitely watch that. I found, because you can't get the full episodes here of Not Safe with Nikki Glaser, but you can find on YouTube. I just watched the one where you put your guy friends on a lie detector and ask them if they thought about having sex with you. It's so funny. People have to check that out.
Oh my God. That was fun. The girl that you had heard have sex died a long time ago, and we haven't heard those nightly howls in quite a while. That wolf.
I didn't hear a wolf.
Oh my God. I can only imagine, Jack. I cannot believe you've heard me have sex. It's like hearing a podcast of porn. That's like what that is. You've heard me do porn pretty much. It's like, that's so embarrassing. But I guess I just have to live with it. And you asked me to do your podcast. You must not have any hard feelings.
Definitely not. No way. You're still one of my absolute favorite comedians. I love your stuff, Nikki. I recommend it to anyone who's listening to this who hasn't seen your stuff. There's the stand-up specials on Netflix, anything on YouTube. Tell me, where you've got a podcast called You Up with Nikki Glaser. I just didn't understand, when is it a radio show? When is it just a podcast?
Yeah, it's very confusing. So it is only now, it's just a podcast now. It was a radio show for a while because I had a radio show at Sirius, but now it's just a podcast and I do it 5 days a week. And it's just like kind of a diary from my life right now, which is living with my parents in the suburbs of St. Louis.
Cool. Well, is there anything else you want to point people towards?
No, just, you know, follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I have new things that are going to be coming out pretty soon, and I think you would really like them. So just follow me and you can find them there.
Cool.
That's about it, though.
All right, Nikki, I'm so appreciative that you jumped on this chat today. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
It was so fun. You are so good. I feel so gotten in such a good way. I loved it. That was like a roller coaster of emotions.
All right. Nikki, thanks so much.
Thanks, Jack.
See you later.
Okay, bye.
Nikki Glaser in Jackie Rhodes Studios. Thanks for listening to the podcast. At the end of each guest episode, we do a talking points section, which is ways that you can interact with the show at jackierhodesstudios@gmail.com. So if this is your first time here, please join in with the show by giving me an email. You can also win the world's fastest guitar, the Yamaha RS720B. Anybody whose email gets read on the show gets a raffle ticket to win the Yamaha at the end of the first series.
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
And the easiest way to get into the show is through the talking points. So the talking points from Nikki's episode, she was such a fangirl of Taylor Swift and unashamedly. And I loved that because I feel like, even though I don't have the posters on my wall and I don't obsess over the bands like I used to when I was a teenager, I feel like there's a bit of that inside me. So let me know the artists that make you react like a teenager today. Who are artists that you follow like a 15-year-old girl followed One Direction when they were first out? I was going to say just One Direction, but I mean, that's probably a dated reference by now and 15-year-old girls don't care about One Direction anymore, but who are the artists that make you feel like a teenager again? Do you still have band posters on your wall or artist posters on your wall? If so, let me know. Second talking point.
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
Well, this one actually ties back to the first one. I'm gonna do this. No one else has to do it, but I'm going to do it. And if you want to do it with your favorite band. Nikki talking about the, she called it a bracket. I called it like a knockout system where it looks like a grid for the World Cup finals, right? Where each team is going up against each other and they get knocked out until there's two teams left and then a winner is decided. But doing that for your favorite band to try to work out what you consider to be your favorite band's favorite song. My all-time favorite band is Green Day. I'm going to do it for Green Day. I'm only going to do the albums from like the 90s up until 2004 when they released American Idiot. So I'm even going to start from the first major label one. So Dookie, Insomniac, Nimrod, Warning, and American Idiot. Outside of those albums, they're just on my favorite. So I'm gonna drill down on those ones. I'm going to make a bracket system for every song on those albums, and I'm going to crown one Green Day song the winner, which I'll do in the next podcast, which will be the making of episode of this song.
Talking points, oh, what are you talking points?
So those are the two talking points from today's episode. Please drop me a line at jackierodestudios@gmail.com. If you want to get involved with either of those talking points or just email me about anything to do with the show. If your email gets read out on the show, you will get a raffle ticket to win a Yamaha electric guitar. Congratulations to everybody who's already got raffle tickets. The raffle will be drawn at the end of the series, and I'm so excited to give away the guitar. I have been playing it. It will come in almost brand new condition when it's delivered to you, but I have been noodling on it a little bit. JackieRhodesStudios@gmail.com. As for this week's song, which I really had fun making, I took a little bit of what Nikki was joking about when she was saying that she would have loved to be in Taylor Swift's entourage. And because Taylor Swift has such famous people in her entourage, or somebody like that would travel with such a big entourage, that Nikki would be way at the back. So this song is not about Nikki and not about Taylor Swift, but just about the idea of a guy who is the lowest ranking member in his entourage. It's called, not surprisingly, the lowest ranking member in the entourage. Thanks for listening. This is Jackie Rhodes Studios. Yeah, all right. I'm going to tell you what it's like being the lowest ranking member in an entourage. Let's go. Every time that the Uber comes, I'm the one that gets bumped to the seat at the front. I gotta make small talk cause the driver wants to chat, and I can't really hear what's being said in the back. So when we get back to the pad, it's sad cause everybody else knows the inside gag except for the guy at the front of the car. I'm the lowest ranking member in the entourage. What's the joke, guys? What? I must have missed it. All the boys in the box at the big game, drinking champagne. What a shame that my name wasn't on the list, so I missed out. Had to buy my tickets through a tap. Meanwhile, they're smoking cigars while they're drinking free beer. I'm lining up at the bar and I look up at the box and they wave through the glass. The lowest ranking member in the entourage. Do you guys still want to meet up after the game? Like, should you come down to me? Because I can't really get to you, so where do you want to meet?
Yeah, everybody in the club say what?
What?
Everybody in the house say what?
What?
Main guy in the entourage says what's
your name again, dude?
That dick is always forgetting my name. He's got too much fame up at the front of the game. In the video clips, he's always the main one. Me, I'm up the back out of frame, son. That's me, way at the back with the backwards hat. Was it even worth being on set? Cause you got a freeze frame, enhance, enlarge to see the lowest ranking member of the entourage.
So that's the final edit of the video, is it? What about that team photo we took at the end? Could they put that in?
Everybody wants an after party. They assume they can have it in my hotel room. And they thank me for my hospitality. Then they throw my TV off the balcony. Hotel property in the pool as they trash the place. Next they threw my suitcase. Then they lit a firework out of my ass. I'm the lowest ranking member in the entourage.
That really hurt though, guys. It left a mark on me. How do you guys want to divide up the damage to the hotel? Should I get this one and then you guys get the next one? How do you want that to work?